I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today. Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Is your child struggling with a specific subject or need help with homework? Are they asking questions that you're not sure you can fully answer? IXL Learning is an online learning program for kids. It covers math, language arts, science, and social studies. IXL is designed. This program will improve your kids' grades. Studies done in almost every state in the country, the kids who had IXL are consistently doing better. Powered by advanced algorithms, IXL gives the right help to each kid no matter the age or personality. And it doesn't have to eat up all your time. One subscription gets you everything for all the kids in your home, pre-K to 12th grade. So don't miss out. 1 in 4 students in the U.S. are learning with IXL. IXL is used in 95 of the top 100 school districts in the U.S. Make an impact on your child's learning. Get IXL now. And listeners can get an exclusive 20% off IXL membership when they sign up today at IXL.com/audio. Visit IXL.com/audio to get the most effective learning program out there at the best price.
Hey everyone, what's up? Welcome to Anime Initiative, the anime focused segment of Comic Book Nation. We are here to talk about all the big things in anime today. And if you know anything about anime, I'm sure you can kind of guess what myself and my two lovely hosts will be talking about with the passing of Akira Toriyama. So before we move forward into the show, let's do some introductions. I'm Megan Peters. I'm your host here at Anime Initiative. And I have my two lovely friends and writers here, Evan Valentine.
And hey everybody. Sorry to be here. I always love being here with everybody, but man, what a...
wish you were under better circumstances, right?
Yeah. Wish we were totally under better circumstances.
I know when I was preparing to, you know, get this intro in, I was trying to figure out, like, how do I tone in my, like, levels for this episode? Because, like, right. I want to be energetic, and, you know, I want you guys to have a great show to listen to. But man, sometimes, you know, there's just news in the cycle that hurts to talk about. And that will be a lot of the latter half of our show, us talking about Akira Toriyama. But to start maybe on a little bit more of a positive note, another major thing happened in anime this past week. Essentially, actually, you know, just like a couple days ago, the Academy Awards happened. And for once in its life, anime actually got its like proper applause. It got its roses for once in its life. We got an anime that won an Academy Award. Everybody brace yourself. Also, specifically, my son, Godzilla, also won an Oscar because we all know that I'm the mother of Godzilla. I'm number one fan. I think we should start off talking about the Oscars first. That's a little bit of a happier note for the first half of our show, right?
Let's warm up a bit, you know.
Start up, then go down.
We'll start up. We'll get up real high. Let's start though talking about Godzilla. As I obviously just introduced, Godzilla is my son. I love Godzilla. I am number one Godzilla stan, and Godzilla Minus One managed to win the franchise's first ever Academy Award after 70 years, which is insane to me.
Yeah.
That
yeah,
Godzilla yeah. has never won an Oscar before now, but it won the best, it won the Oscar for best visual effects for Godzilla Minus One, which if you haven't seen, you have to see it. It's one of those like movies where I'm not somebody that really buys into hype a lot. I kind of just like, if someone's like really gun-ho about something, kind of like, yeah, okay, I'll see it in my own time. But when I saw Godzilla Minus One, I immediately went and bought tickets for a showing the next day for my husband and myself. And I said, this is it. This is the movie. So what are we thinking about this win, guys?
Yeah, no, I totally agree. I'm so glad it won for visual effects. It feels huge, though, right? Like, it, yeah, visual effects isn't like the big, big award. You know, it's no like best feature film or whatever, but it feels like that, right? Like, it feels like that significant of a win that it feels like Godzilla just swept the entire awards and I wouldn't know otherwise, you know? It's just been that kind of win.
I think that it's really a testament to the work that Takashi Yamazaki and the rest of the crew on Godzilla Minus One were able to do with the budget that they had to make it look. I mean, it's compared, like, let's be real, it's comparable to like the legendary stuff in terms of, for me personally, I thought, aside from how amazing the story is, because it is, it's an amazing story, I would have put this as best, I would have nominated it for best picture for this category. I think like everybody else here might feel the same way, but also like the visual effects are just astounding. It's gorgeous to look at. It's one of the best Godzillas. Like, as Megan kind of mentioned, this for me as well is my favorite Godzilla movie, and I was not expecting it that to happen because I love Shin Godzilla so much. And for this, for Godzilla Minus One to overtake that is such a testament to how amazing that this movie is. And yes, if you have not seen this movie, even if you're not a kaiju fan, if you're not a Godzilla fan, this is the Godzilla movie to see.
Yeah,
especially because the crew were so excited to attend the Oscars too. Like, you know, that excitement kind of fed me through the evening as well. You know, with their awesome like custom heels with the little Godzilla claws, and like they brought their tiny Godzillas on stage. It was just like, man, you just feel the love. And I don't know, with Godzilla Minus One, right? Like, what do you even do? I think after this, I don't want a sequel. I know that might sound like blasphemous, but
that is a controversial take.
I mean, because like the last one we got, Evan mentioned Shin Godzilla, and those two are so different from one another. So like, and if Godzilla Minus One did as well as it did while being its own thing, I kind of want to wait like five more years and see what the next Godzilla is going to be. Like, I wonder what
I'm
that's
just
going
too
to
impatient,
be.
I guess. I mean, it's not even that I think I necessarily want like a sequel, but I want to keep exploring this world through, you know, Yamazaki-san's vision. I like, he has such a human take on Godzilla, which I think that's when you see Godzilla at its best, is when it's so humanized and complex. Because in the comments, I see several people have mentioned, you know, Godzilla's had some bad films. I'm not going to be here and say that Godzilla has only released good films. There was a dark period. Okay. I freely admit in some of the millennia era and a little bit before, we had some weird movies. And like, I admit that. But in the last really 5 years, I mean, really with the comeuppance of, you know, Shin Godzilla, we've seen such a different side of what Japan is doing with this creature. And I'm excited to see where it goes further. I would have loved to have seen this movie be up for, you know, best picture. But, you know, it would have been really interesting to see that kind of fight go down between Godzilla and Oppenheimer, because those two projects are really, you know, two sides of the same coin.
Yeah, for real.
But we did get the best visual effects, which is insane considering the budget for this movie. They won't give us the actual number, was under $15 million, which I know to us like regular everyday folks is a ton of money. But the next lowest budget in the category was the creator at like $80 million.
Jeez. Yeah. Wow. And it was it shared a category with like Guardians of the Galaxy and stuff like that, right? Like, so
yeah, Mission Impossible. Like, yeah, insane franchises. So clearly, I mean, they just knocked it out of the park. So we want to give a big congratulations to Godzilla. Absolutely. Definitely deserved it. As for our second big win, which actually came towards the beginning of the night for the Oscars, Best Animated Feature, it was a really tight race, but Studio Ghibli, The Boy and the Heron, won, which I think all three of us were really kind of rooting for. But man, it was a really good year for animation in terms of feature films. It was a tough race, but ultimately Hayao Miyazaki did bring home the win, as well with Toshio Suzuki, who produced the movie for Studio Ghibli. So what do you guys think? Did you guys expect this to happen? Because I know I was.
I mean, the hype was unreal before this thing even came out in Japan, right? Like, mm-hmm. It did. I mean, just looking back on its release, like, promo circle, like, it just didn't even do the circuit, right? Like, they refused to show promotional materials or, like, mm-hmm. images or trailers before the movie even hit. And then when it was finally going to release worldwide, they were like, okay, here's an image from it. Enjoy that one image. Oh, here's a trailer finally after Japan's had it for like a year. So it's great to see it come full circle. It was so like well done that Hayao Miyazaki like came out of retirement again.
He will not stay down.
Yeah.
He cannot stop.
I know. He just keeps getting back up. Like, God bless him.
Yeah, and good for Ghibli. This is the only second completely hand-drawn animated film to win the Oscar after Spirited Away, which is like huge.
It's the second, and the first one was still Studio Ghibli.
Yeah,
it's wild. What is happening? Ugh. What do you think, Evan? What was your reaction when you saw?
I said before we recorded our podcast that I was going to have a hot take.
All right. Lay the bomb. Put it down.
I'm very happy to share with you both and to our listeners that I do not think that The Boy and the Heron should have won Best Animated Feature.
Wow.
In any other year, I thought it should have. With that being said, I think Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse should have won. I'm wearing a Spider-Man shirt.
Now here's a bombshell I'm going to drop. I completely disagree with you.
Now I will say this.
The first half of Spider-Verse, Across the Spider-Verse, was so strong. It's so strong. The beginning that you get with Gwen Stacy and her father. I mean, that animation reel was just insane. I mean, the nuances put into the animation of that. Mm-hmm. So good. But the halfway to the very end of The Boy and the Heron for me was just, I mean, no notes. Zero notes. It was a nice, full, complete movie. And maybe I'll change my mind after I watch the Spider-Verse trilogy or however much it's going to be as one thing, because that feels like one cohesive story. But in terms of a compact narrative, in terms of storytelling, The Boy and the Heron still takes it for me.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Picture that super soft t-shirt you love sleeping in. The one that gets softer and softer the more you wear it. Now you can bring that same lived-in softness to your entire bed with Signature Vintage Wash Sheets from Boll & Branch. This all-new collection is even softer than your favorite t-shirt, with a distinctly relaxed look and feel for your best night's sleep. Just like all Boll & Branch bedding, Signature Vintage Wash Sheets start with the highest quality, 100% organic cotton. The lived and feel comes from a small batch washing process, creating a level of softness you've never felt before. And it's not just the feel. Boll & Branch mastered the laid-back aesthetic using a special technique that creates the well-loved look you'll find with vintage jeans. And true to the Boll & Branch hallmark, Signature Vintage Wash Sheets get softer and softer with every wash. Right now, you can get 15% off your first order with promo code ODYSSEY and save on their most relaxing sheets. So head to BollAndBranch.com today. That's BOLL and Branch.com.
Knowing how to speak and understand a new language can be an invaluable tool when traveling, meeting new friends, or just even to master a new skill. But it's not always simple when you're bogged down by textbooks and structure classes. That's why so many people trust Rosetta Stone. Rosetta Stone is the most trusted language learning program, available on desktop or as an app. It truly immerses you in the language you want to learn, like Spanish, French, Italian, Chinese, and more. You won't just be studying English translations. The Rosetta Stone intuitive process helps you pick up a language naturally, first with words, then phrases, then sentences. Don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. For a very limited time, listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/rs10. That's 50% off unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/rs10 today.
I mean, Evan, Shameik Moore agreed with you. Star
Spider-Verse, and I agree with him.
Miles Morales did tweet out that they, you know, he felt it was robbed, and you know, there's a lot of work that goes into that, and you know, he did clarify later with a statement saying mm-hmm. that you know, it's not really harsh, but it was like he didn't mean to come across as harsh, but it's just like, you know, you put all that work into the movie and it doesn't right. get that big recognition. Yeah. Totally understandable, but you know, Evan, someone agrees with you, so there you go. Like, someone really big, like,
someone out there agrees. I would say more than just one person agrees, but
let's like unpack this a little bit yeah. because I know for us, as you know, people who work, live, and breathe anime, and as well mm-hmm. as just general mm-hmm. animation, we are the number one animation stands of comicbook.com, the three of us. Animation does not give its appropriate due, its kudos, its roses sure. here in the West. It is very much, you know, Jimmy Kimmel even made the joke again at the Oscars that, you know, which of you voters let your kids fill out the ballot for the, you know, the animation category, which is so asinine, you know, because yeah. when you're looking at the stories of what movies were up, I mean, Nimona was, you know, up for an award, mm-hmm. but was up for this category. And it is such a beautiful story about adolescence and growing up and like being conflicted about your identity. You know, Elemental talks about like, you know, two different worlds coming together with prejudice and, you know, trying to create your own story. And then you can look at something like, you know, Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse, you look at The Boy and the Heron, you know, that movie, which was dedicated as almost semi-autobiographical about Hayao Miyazaki and his mm-hmm. late, you know, one of his late friends, Isao Takahata, who also co-founded Studio Ghibli with him. These are some really complex, compact stories filled with emotion that can kids watch them? Yes. Mm-hmm. But are they really just something for adults to dive into? Also, yes. It's not a kid's genre. It's not just for kids. It's never been just for kids, but it still somewhat has that stigma here in the United States. Mm-hmm. I feel like this year's nominations were a really good step forward in putting forward the kind of animated stories that are great for audiences of all ages.
Mm-hmm. And like, I want to throw it out there that by no means am I knocking The Boy and the Heron. By no means am I knocking Studio Ghibli. But here's the thing. Here's the
thing. You're going to get a knock at your door. And it's Totoro. He's just standing menacingly with his umbrella at your front door.
Mr. Valentine, I believe you were the mistake and not anime. But here's the thing. For me personally, when I look at The Boy and the Heron, would I put it in my top five Studio Ghibli movies of all time? No.
Do really?
I think I would not? Wow. I think that for me personally, The Wind Also Rises was a better movie in every respect in terms of what Hayao Miyazaki was trying to achieve and the message that he was trying to convey in terms of like the end, kind of your life's work. The end of your career, what you're trying to achieve, things like that. I think that that worked better as a potential retirement movie for him than The Boy and the Heron. And like, for you guys personally, do you think that like The Boy and the Heron is like better than Princess Mononoke?
No way, shape, or form.
Better than Nausicaa of the Valley of the Wind, even better than Castle in the Sky.
Yeah, I will say this. No. Mononoke and Nausicaä are my top two Ghibli films of all time. I mean, they're probably tied for first place, to be honest. But I'll say in my top five, I would give The Boy and the Heron probably fifth place. Do I think it's... Now, here's my hot take. Do I think that The Boy and the Heron is better than Spirited Away? Yes.
Wow, that is a hot take.
I don't know. I'm so sorry. I love Chihiro. Don't get me wrong. I love Haku. I love Spirited Away. Literally have a Spirited Away tattoo. the message and the emotional, it's the emotional resonance that I got from The Boy and the Heron that really spoke to me about the journey that its main character kind of went through in dealing with grief and war and just total upheaval through adolescence. You know, Chihiro experienced some of that in Spirited Away. Mm-hmm. And I feel like the visuals are kind of on par. So for me, it is a purely, and I admit this, it is purely subjective that I really love the main character of The Boy and the Heron just a little bit more than I love Chihiro. But that's just me. Mm-hmm. And I admit that that is subjective. So nobody, Totoro, do not come to my house in the middle of the night. I do not need the cat bus to whisk me away. I'm fine. But that's just my preference.
Yeah, my favorite's Kiki's Delivery Service. So, you know, I'm just like completely out of the realm of all this stuff, like in terms of like, oh, you know, it's doing all this. And I just like Kiki. I'm just like, hey, I like what I like, you know, and... Yeah. So here I'm glad it won. I will just say that. I will cap off my end of all this by saying I'm glad it won. You know, whether it deserved it or not, I have no idea whether or not it ranks highly in Studio Ghibli's catalog. I don't know. I'm glad G-Kids, like for G-Kids, the fact that like this is their first Academy Award win for something they've distributed. Mm-hmm. Congratulations to them. This is wild. Like, just I'm glad it won for all those things. I will just say that for everything it's accomplished, I'm glad it won.
And I wanted to touch upon really quickly why I think that Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse should have won specifically.
Do it.
Because I feel that, and Megan, you kind of mentioned it a little bit with the opening of the movie. Mm-hmm. I think that the things that Sony did with that movie are revolutionary to the anime industry as a whole. I think that the my favorite animated sequence of last year was the Gwen scenes where they had kind of the it looked kind of like a purple watercolor aesthetic to it. Just amazing, gorgeous to look at. I will praise up and down the Renaissance Vulture, where they have all of the Leonardo da Vinci design work that's happening when he's throwing the bombs around. Just an amazing, it's a technical achievement, as well as the story for me.
Evan, does it have Robert Pattinson as the Heron?
Oh my God.
I don't think so. So I'm just going to...
Here's the thing. I do want to mention this. So it is obviously... When the Boy and the Heron came, into countries that speak English, it was released obviously with the Japanese audio with subtitles. Mm-hmm. Also, we had an incredible dub with Florence Pugh, Robert Pattinson, you know, Dave Bautista, just some really amazing actors and performances. For a first, they just announced in Japan they are releasing the English dub with Japanese subtitles.
Because
the dub in English is so good, Japanese audiences were like, hey, we want to watch it. And they're like, all right, well, we'll just dub it in Japanese for you. So it's kind of like a weird reversal that's happening right now, which I'm all here for. If you have not seen Robert Pattinson's performance as the Heron, you are fundamentally missing something in your life. That's all I'll say. I don't know if it's a good thing or a bad thing you're missing, but it's missing. That's all I'll say. But to kind of capstone this conversation, you know, we've touched on it before. Animation traditionally, and especially anime, hasn't been given its critical dues in the United States or kind of just in Western pop culture, you know, overall as it should be. You know, in general entertainment spheres, I mean, anime is blowing up. Anyone who's listening to this podcast knows that. We know that. It's our livelihood. It's everywhere you look. But still in critical spheres, specifically the Oscars and the Academy Awards, you know, looking at previous movies like The Tale of Princess Kaguya, which was nominated but didn't win, you know, things like Your Name, Weathering with You, you know, Suzume even, you know, a lot of these really gorgeous, high profile anime films in the past have been overlooked so often. Do we think that both this win for Studio Ghibli with The Boy and the Heron, as well as anime's increased profile in America, will begin to shift that narrative of how anime is viewed critically in the United States?
No.
No.
Yeah, no.
As Nick said, it's hopeful, but it's no.
No. It's like, I'm sure people were asking that question probably after Spirited Away won. And
still,
that happened decades ago, and
like
still,
we're getting Moana 2, so you know we're gonna expect to see Moana 2 win it or something. Like it just it's a wrap. Like this was the time to win. I'm glad it won. I forgot who said it in the comments. I'm sorry, but you know it's the DiCaprio thing where they mm-hmm. want it for this one. Maybe it's not the one they should have won it for. You know, debate what you have you, but it won. So this is the time to win. Next year, it's going to be go back to Disney or whatever comes out.
It's like give me a call when Ghibli isn't the one to win. You know what I'm saying?
It's not even that, but give me a call when it's not Miyazaki with Ghibli.
I didn't see Earwig and the Witch take home.
Oh my God. I know. Because Ghibli has been up in the nomination weeds before, but it's not Miyazaki. Miyazaki obviously is this kind of insane monolith, not just in anime and animation, but just filmmaking in general. I agree. It's not gonna budge the needle. I think it definitely gives a sense of, you know, gratification to you know, not just, you know, animation fans, but people who really enjoy anime, because it has been so long since Spirited Away won. So many new anime fans have been born or have joined the fandom that didn't get to experience that kind of, you know, critical affirmation, if you want to say. But yeah, it's not going to do anything. Mm-hmm. Wah, wah. Well, we'll see what's up for the awards next year. I mean, there are some great anime films coming out, but also, just like Nick mentioned, we have some great general animation pieces going live for the Oscars that'll be eligible next year. I don't think we're going to have, obviously, anything Miyazaki related for a long, long time. If ever. I don't know. Maybe he's done. Maybe he's not. We'll see. But yeah, those were the Oscars this year. Godzilla and Studio Ghibli came in strong, and we love to see it. So we're going to take a quick ad break, pay for the show, and we're going to dedicate the rest of this episode into talking about Akira Toriyama, a man that, you know, I will say is the reason that the three of us are here talking today. You know, we want to talk about his legacy, the things that we love the most about what he put out into this world, and, you know, where we think, you know, his legacy is going to move forward to in the future. So stay tuned.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify is got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odyssey podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odyssey podcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/odyssey podcast.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
This episode is brought to you by Bumble. So you want to find someone you're compatible with, specifically someone who's ready for a serious connection, totally open to having kids in the future, is a tall, rock-climbing Libra, and loves rom-coms with vegan pizzas on Tuesdays just as much as you do. Bumble knows that you know exactly what's right for you. So whatever it is you're looking for, Bumble's features can help you find it. Date now on Bumble.
Welcome back. This is Anime Initiative, the anime focus segment of Comic Book Nation. And we are into the second half of today's episode where we are going to be talking about Akira Toriyama. So I think it goes without saying that this is obviously such an emotional topic for literally millions of people to think about and to talk about. But we definitely owe it to Toriyama to honor his legacy, not just with Dragon Ball, but with Dragon Quest, Dr. Slump, so many things he touched. So I'm sure so many of you have known and have heard, but late last week, we did get, you know, an official report confirming that Akira Toriyama, the creator of Dragon Ball, did pass away. He was 68 years old, and he passed away following complications from a subdural hematoma. We don't have any further kind of information about any of his health condition leading up to his death. We know that he did pass on March 1st, and a private funeral was held in Japan with his loved ones. Obviously, when the news broke, I believe on Thursday evening, that Akira Toriyama had passed away, man, that's the closest I think I've seen to like the internet truly coming together in like shock. Yeah. I know Evan was one of the writers on our team at that moment working and looking at the news when it broke. And he had a wonderful conversation with Comic Book Nation's Kofi Outlaw in the most recent episode of Comic Book Nation, if you want to listen to that after this, where they talked a lot about Toriyama. But Evan, I kind of want to get your perspective on this. What was it kind of like when you heard the news?
It stinks. I mean, it's what other way can you possibly put it? Like, one of the things that I did this weekend while I was working, and for most of the weekend I was working, and I was also watching old school Dragon Ball Z, because I hadn't rewatched Dragon Ball Z in a really long time, like not the original, like the same. I crushed a lot of the Saiyan saga over the past couple of days. And it, like, me as an adult now being able to rewatch it, and obviously, like, we're steeped in Dragon Ball, we report a lot on it, but being able to look at it through like the eyes of myself as an adult versus me as a kid, the things I'm able to take away from it, the moments that like I may have been lost on me when I was a kid versus now. Mm-hmm. It's hard to put into words. But you know, kind of Megan, like you said, I think that seeing folks on the internet just unite in such a way to come together and honor this man and honor his creation, It filled me with so much hope and like joy and happiness to see. I'm so thrilled to see videos of stadiums being sold out in South America and Latin America to watch the Dragon Ball Super finale. I know that happened a couple of years ago, but it just goes to show the impact mm-hmm. that Dragon Ball had, to see everyone just rally behind Goku and Frieza as they fought against Jiren. It still pumps me up to this day. It's amazing. But like, you know, the influence that Toriyama, I think, like, you know, kind of Megan, as you said, like the three of us wouldn't be here if not for Akira Toriyama. His work got so many people into anime in general in North America, and it just can't be overstated. Like, he might be gone, but Dragon Ball is just gonna live on for decades, maybe like hundreds of years into the future. It's amazing.
What about you, Nick?
Yeah, I mean, echoing what Evan said, like, I literally wouldn't be here without Dragon Ball. Like, showing a little bit behind the curtain of, you know, when I first got hired on the comic book, when I had my interviews, like, one of the big things I remember being asked by Megan and the team was like, oh, you watching Dragon Ball Super right now? What's your favorite moment from the Tournament of Power so far? And my, you know, dumb thinking, nervous brain wasn't like, oh, Ultra Instinct Goku or anything like that. I was just like, oh, Tien did this really cool thing where he like got to matter for the first time in years. And so I guess it all worked out for me, obviously, because I'm here.
That's when I knew you were a true nerd.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Like, I literally would not have this job without Dragon Ball. I would not be into anime without Dragon Ball. Like, you know, I'm so sad I don't have any of my button-ups anymore. You know, there's so much that I wish I still had from that era. You know, mm-hmm. I too went through the phase that everyone goes through where, you know, you're like, oh, anime's not cool anymore. And then a couple years older, I'm like, wait a minute. Yes, it is. And it still is. And Dragon Ball's still going. What? We have Dragon Ball Super. What? And so here I am. It's all blown up to where I am now. And I literally owe the world to this one person who's managed to craft an entire universe that has inspired so many other universes. And it's absolutely mind-blowing to see the impact that this creator is leaving behind. And it's a deep and personal impact too. Like, it's not just a, oh man, like, I really liked Dragon Ball, you know, I liked one episode or something. But no, like, there are so many people that, like, Super Saiyan, Kamehameha, like, Goku in general. Like, Goku's basically like a Mickey Mouse in terms of recognition. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It's just, there are so many elements, power levels, power scaling. Just the world of anime would not be here where it is today without Toriyama's influence and ideas and creations. And it's one of those things where I still don't feel it. Like, because we're getting a new Dragon Ball anime this year, the anniversary, mm-hmm. it's the 40th anniversary this year. Like, it still doesn't feel real to me, but right. Eventually it is going to start sinking in. Like, oh man, we're not going to get any of those ideas from his, like, such a creative brain anymore. And mm-hmm. I think that's ultimately what's really hitting hardest.
Yeah, it's wild to talk about. I mean, when the news broke on Thursday, I mean, I was speaking, you know, with Evan on, you know, just texting each other. I was in the middle of a musical at a large performance house here in Nashville. My husband is performing in, and it was like opening night, a huge, huge deal for him and the family. And intermission was about to end. He was about to come back on stage, and I got the notification and I ran out of that building. And I did not return for like 40 some odd minutes. I thought I was going to miss the rest of the play. Not just covering the event, but just the emotional response I had. It's so interesting. I mean, I remember looking back, and I mean, so many people listening to the podcast will have this, you know, kind of guttural reaction. I mean, I would just remember coming home from elementary, middle school, turn on the TV, Toonami'd be on, I'd see Tom, and we would just watch Dragon Ball. Now, I initially only watched because I wanted to see Sailor Moon because it was around the same programming block. And nice. my older brother wanted to watch Dragon Ball. And I was like, Dragon Ball. magical girls. I don't like it. And he was like, he wouldn't let me up. Like, he would like sit on me. He'd be like, watch Dragon Ball. And so at first, like, my initial impression of Dragon Ball was like, oh, this is awful. And then to be fair, he made me start watching in the middle of like the never ending Frieza Goku battle. So like, maybe that was why I didn't have the context. But the next time I started watching was right at the beginning of like the Cell Saga, and I was hooked. I was freaked out. I was so freaked out by the androids. I was so scared. And then, you know, as I kind of grew older, I kept it with me. And, you know, as an adult, I do essentially owe my entire career to Toriyama as somebody who loves and covers anime and manga. It cannot, as Evan said, be overstated the influence that Akira Toriyama has on modern manga and just anime creation. It's truly, I mean, there's no part of it that exists as we know it today that hasn't been affected or impacted by Goku in one way, shape, or form. And, you know, we're 40 years now down from where the franchise began, and it's still going on, which is insane. Mm-hmm. To mention in the comments, I see a lot of you have mentioned it, the amount of impact this has had in terms of, you know, memorials and mourning across the world is insane. As much as, you know, Dragon Ball made an impact in the United States when it was brought over here, it pales in comparison to what it did in Latin America and South America. I mean, like Evan said, there were football stadiums just completely sold out to watch the Tournament of Power finale. And now videos have kind of surfaced of tens of thousands of people gathering in Argentina, in places in Spain, in places in, you know, Guatemala, of people honoring Akira Toriyama with, you know, spirit bomb kind of gatherings. Like, that's insane, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like, speaking of Dragon Ball Super's finale, like, that's, once again, this is right around the time when I got hired here. And, you know, I jumped in right when the Tournament of Power was finally doing stuff, right when it was like, okay, here are the final, like, teams, and here are the final opponents. And seeing that live and in real time, and seeing like the reports from Mexico pop up and the images of people, like they were straight up like placing bets on it.
Oh yeah.
Like, yeah, like
it was Goku bigger than the Super Bowl. Equivalent, or like the World Cup, like the FIFA World Cup. It was insane.
Yeah, like it's so wild that like we had that, like we got to have that as a community and as big as, and you know, it's different from the Dragon Ball Z days because those days we weren't connected together as much as we are now.
Yeah.
Like now we could see everyone around the world experiencing this one thing at the same time, like right as it hit in Japan. And it was just such a wild experience. Like I don't think we'll ever have that kind of connective community tissue outside of these memorials like ever again. And that's it's like still the just only mind-blowing. Place
we could get them in the future is future Dragon Ball
things.
Yeah, I mean, the series is still going. I mean, I know at this point we have, you know, the loss of Toriyama to contend with, but for those who aren't aware of, you know, kind of where the state of Dragon Ball is as of today, this fall a brand new television anime that's canon to the franchise, Dragon Ball Daima, is going to be released. Initially, Toriyama wanted nothing to do with it. And they sent him over some scripts, and he was like, oh, well, I'll fix a couple things. And then they sent him over some sketches, and he was like, oh, well, let me sketch a couple different things. And then he, in his final interview that he, you know, did in February that was just released this week, he was just like, yeah, then I just got so involved with the setting and stories and the villains and everything. And it said it reminded him of working on the OG days of Dragon Ball, you know, well before Z, you know, when Goku was actually a kid. So Dragon Ball Daima will have Toriyama's fingerprints all over it. Plus there's the fact that the Dragon Ball Super manga is continuing as far as we are aware. Akira Toriyama has been working on that, you know, primarily as kind of a storyboarder and, you know, story producer with his artist and protege, the artist Toyotaro. We are going to get a new chapter this month. He's not taking a break. I am stunned. Toyotaro is just working through it, but he will be releasing chapter 103 right now. Himself and Toriyama were working on an arc that kind of pits Ultra Instinct Goku against Beast, against Gohan Beast, his new form that we met in Dragon Ball Super Superhero, which has been a very solid arc so far.
Sorry to pivot real quick, but isn't it wild that like after, you know, so internet reports. I remember the early days of like the SSJ5, right? Like, you know, just the
Dragon Ball,
the absolutely wild, you know, Super Saiyan form with like white hair, and then the Ozaru
just, like,
fur.
Scrolling down deviant art, being like, what would Super Saiyan 6 look like?
And it's totally real now. Like, that's the wildest thing to me, is that those are real forms that we're watching right, like, or looking at right now.
I may or may not have written fan fiction back when I was a kid of Dragon Ball Z on the website Planet Namek, as well as on the Black Goku. I might have. Reports are still coming in. I wanted to touch upon really quick, because B. Lee mentioned it. He says, I remember watching DBZ on bootleg VHS tapes, and I would love very, very quickly to talk about my first experiences with Dragon Ball, which was waking up super early when I was really young, which was this might predate folks seeing this on Toonami, but there was a time when Dragon Ball Z was brought, and I believe it was I can't really remember the name of the folks who had brought it over originally. This was like pre-Funimation bringing it back. But like, there was a time where Dragon Ball Z was so heavily censored that they eliminated the concept of death, where it was, I'm going to blow you into another dimension. They amazingly got rid of the concept of hell, replacing it with HFIL, which was Home for Infinite Losers. Amazing.
Best edit. Like, when I found out it was actually hell in the real one, I was like, I was a little disappointed. I can't lie. Like, I'm like, no.
It's the early days of just anime censorship. Between all the censorship that I learned about from Dragon Ball Z, and also like how they censored all the like queer relationships in Sailor Moon.
Oh, yeah. Oh, in Sailor Moon, they're cousins. I'm
like, as a child, just right over my head.
But the way that, even despite those things happening in the show, I knew when I watched it as a little kid that this was something really special. And I would go on to watch, horrible real player videos of like the Goku versus Majin Vegeta fights that were so amazing. It blew my mind. I was like, why is their hair blonde? I don't know that.
Yeah,
like,
shout outs to AMVs, because
literally read my mind. I was just about to say, I was introduced to Linkin Park because of Dragon Ball in our AMVs. Those things legitimately, like, imagine 7-year-old me, Megan, give me purple hair if you need to in your mind, just tears streaming down her face watching a Linkin Park AMV about future Gohan. And my mom would come in and be like, you're not supposed to be on the computer, and I'd be like, Mom, Linkin Park, that was legitimately what was happening.
Yeah, future of Trunks, or history of Trunks, changed lives. Like, I think when you talk about
ruined,
right?
Me.
Yeah, like when you talk about like the Dragon Ball movies as a whole, it's got to be like history of Trunks, maybe, you know, Revenge of Cooler, and then maybe like you got to throw Broly in there for like the street cred, I guess.
You got to throw Bardock, it's crazy now that you look back at all those moments and you see how they have been legitimized by Toriyama and Dragon Ball in the last 5 years, by seeing, you know, Broly in the new kind of timeline that, you know, the canon timeline that we get to see now, by seeing more information about Bardock. I mean, it's the legacy, the hold that Dragon Ball continues to have. I mean, one of my things that I love to write about here at Comic Book, and you could look these up at any time, is every quarter Toei Animation puts out, you know, fiscal reports and financial statements that compare all of its series. And what, it's been since like 2018, around there, that we've had a Dragon Ball TV anime. And even still, Dragon Ball is like one of its top earners at Toei Animation, even without any new episodes for like 6 years. It's been so long. It's insane the amount of love and support. Like, officials of nations in China and Venezuela, like, put out, like, mourning statements about mm-hmm. the loss of Akira Toriyama. I mean, that doesn't just happen. Like, it doesn't. And the thing that then gets really heartbreaking is you see there's so many out there currently. You can find a lot of them on comicbook.com. So many colleagues and friends of Toriyama released beautiful, beautiful letters. The creator of Naruto, the creator of One Piece, the creator of Gintama. I mean, if you name a series and they posted, you know, a comment or letter of mourning about Toriyama's passing, that really just gets you. I mean, man, I believe it was in the letter by Ichiro Oda, the creator of One Piece, at the end, you know, for speaking about Toriyama's passing, he wrote that he hopes heaven is as beautiful of a place as Toriyama imagined it to be in Dragon Ball. And that just, man, at that point, like, I hadn't really, like, teared up about the situation. But I read that, and it was just like, all right, I got to take off my glasses. I got to, like, I got to have a moment. It was so emotional.
Yeah, I've been like Evan, I've been getting through it by just going real hard on my DBZ nostalgia, you know, mm-hmm. like I was rewatching like Fusion Reborn and stuff like that, like just pure classics. And you know, and as a Latino, I think I'm predisposed in my blood to like be drawn to Goku figures. So like, I feel like buying more Gokus and like just wanting more Goku near me. And like, man, it's just absolutely mind blowing. And I think like Megan hit the nail on the head earlier too. Like, what's absolutely wild is that we're still going to get new Dragon Ball, and I think with this new Dragon Ball and in this unfortunate situation, I'm hoping that people show a little more respect towards it, you know, just to, you know, because remember Dragon Ball GT, that was the one that they did without Toriyama, and, you know, and it got kind of buried. But if you watch it now, it had some cool ideas. You had your Majoob and you had your Super Saiyan 4 and this, like, those ideas were still...
I mean, the Dark Dragon Balls are pretty sweet, I'm not gonna lie.
Yeah! Yes, and that's what I mean. And so when Dragon Ball Daima hits, you know, I hope people show it that same kind of grace that it's like, you know, when we get these new Dragon Ball chapters and we get this stuff in a post-Toriyama world, like, so Evan, I kind of wanted to get your take on this because unfortunately you've also been through this already with another magnanimous creator with Kentaro Miura and Berserk. Yeah. And that series continued without him and is continuing with new chapters and stuff. So like when you look at that situation and you kind of like compare it to what Dragon Ball's future can be, like how is that, like, how is Berserk going, and how is that a path that we could see this going down?
I'm really sad now.
We'll bring this around these, in a more hopeful light.
All of these
light
anime creators just passing away, because for me, I don't think I mentioned it on the Berserk, is like my favorite anime thing. I love it. It's very dark, it's very brutal, but it's also amazingly beautiful in terms of, and Kentaro Miura is a giant reason, it's the biggest reason for that. I think that originally, and for, it was a year after Miura's passing that his friends at Studio Gaga decided to kind of move forward with creating an ending for Berserk using his notes and everything. And I think that with Dragon Ball Daima and with Dragon Ball Super, I do want them to continue, like, aside from Toriyama having such a big influence on Daima, I think that Super continuing under Toyotaro and him kind of creating the story to move forward in the future. I always wondered kind of how much Toriyama had, like, his influence. He was always working hand in hand with Toyotaro on the manga, and he had more of an active role in Superhero. There were the theories that he didn't know that Dragon Ball was called Dragon Ball Super, which is why he called it Dragon Ball Superhero versus it was called like Dragon Ball Super Superhero. But I'm honestly, I'm looking forward to Dragon Ball Super continuing. We still have, for listeners who might not know, who might not be up to date on the manga events, we still have two giant arcs that Toriyama helped influence in the Moro arc and the Granola, the Survivor arc, that have yet to be animated, which will take, like, if it's on a weekly schedule again, whenever Dragon Ball Super does return, it will take years for those to, you know, play out in the anime. And we will just be able to enjoy Toriyama's works moving forward from there. So when it comes to, I've always been a fan of the idea of new people bringing their creativity to a franchise following the creator's passing. Because I think that all of the creators that are jumping onto a franchise that grew up with it are doing everything in their power. Now, readers and fans might not agree with certain directions that folks take, but at the end of the day, they're fans themselves. Toyotaro got his start. If you don't know, Toyotaro, the current artist on Dragon Ball Super's manga, got his start by creating fan-made Dragon Ball as part of Dragon Ball AF.
Yeah.
Because he loved it so much. He wants to honor Toriyama. In his statement, I believe he said, like, I do this all for him, and he does. And that passion, you can see it in everything that he does. He might not hit the same heights as Toriyama, but he's like, he's doing it in his memory. So I am all for fans taking the reins and continuing the story from there.
And I'll say, in the past, you know, when you look at something like Berserk, you know, Kentaro Miura's, it's really his friends and his loved ones, the people who are most passionate about seeing his vision through, that have taken Berserk and moved along with it. And it's been a very easy transition for the most part. You know, for Dragon Ball, we're still so in the thick of it right now. We have zero idea of what kind of materials Toriyama might have left, you know, behind in the wake of his passing, what he might want to see happen with the Dragon Ball, what he would, you know, if he had any notes for future arcs, anything like that. We have zero connotation or context for that. But what we do know in this moment is that really, you know, as the Dragon Ball Super manga began, you know, the series dating back to 2015, 2014, you know, Toyotaro as an artist, major fan, you know, Akira Toriyama referred to him in several interviews as kind of a protege, as the person that he was kind of looking to pass on the mantle of Goku to. So there is that moment, you know, there is that relationship there and that bond that's both personal, professional, and kind of creative for the two of them. To see kind of what Toyotaro could do with the Toriyama estate and leading Dragon Ball forward. We know we have two projects that are currently in the works that, you know, have Toriyama's personal fingerprints all over it. And we'll kind of see what goes from there. And I know, obviously, a lot of this conversation the three of us have had about Toriyama have been really focused on Dragon Ball. But you have to think that, you know, there were other franchises that, you know, Toriyama has fingers on, most recently Sandland. I mean, we just got, you know, the big movie for it. We have the TV series coming forward. Evan will not too long now be going
out tomorrow.
Yeah. Evan will be getting to go, you know, get a firsthand look at what that Sandland video game is going to be, you know, looking at what also he did with video games in terms of designs for Dragon Quest. I mean, Dragon Quest is huge these days, at least in America. It always kind of like simmered under the surface.
When it was Dragon Warrior, you know, changed the art, because it's like, oh, this is, it's too kiddie. But no, it's like, no, you're releasing a Game Boy Color game. Like,
calm down. Yeah, like Dragon Quest is huge. You know, we have things like Dr. Slump, which I love it's hard to say anything positive comes from this, but I have personally felt vindicated on Toriyama's behalf in some way, that after his passing, people have like realized the genius of Dr. Slump and how crazy it is and how it helped inspire a lot of the movement we see in the Super Mario games. Like, that's insane that Dragon Ball and Toriyama and Dr. Slump had a direct impact on Mario, which is like the biggest gaming franchise ever. He is a Mickey Mouse of gaming. Just the scope of the loss is immeasurable, but with such a large fan base backing Goku in this moment and Toriyama having kind of set in place somebody who could success him creatively, in tandem with the people at Shueisha, with the people at Toei Animation, and with his estate, I'm pretty hopeful for what the future looks like. Mm-hmm. Because just from everything, you read from interviews from Toriyama in the last 5 years, that man has never slipped in terms of passion for what he's created. And the people around him feel much the same. I mean, Masako Nozawa, who has been voicing Goku in Japan for decades now. I mean, she's in it. She says she wants to voice this character until she's like 238 years old. So the people who are in it they're not new to it. They're true to it. They're sticking to it. So it at this point, it's just kind of a waiting game to see, where Toriyama's stuff goes from here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's so wild, that full circle moment. The new series is Kid Goku Returns. And it's weird. Like, it's poetic. It's tragically poetic in that. Mm-hmm. 40th anniversary, Kid Goku Returns, all this happens. We have a clean slate for the future, and it's still so active. Like, it's tragic, but at the same time, there's that hope to it. There's that little bit of light. And honestly, with all that said, I don't think there's a better way to honor Akira Toriyama's legacy in that, yes, mourn the loss, but also have that hope in life and celebrate that life.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's very true. I mean, and you see that in Dragon Ball itself, when Goku has dealt with kind of difficult things, the loss of Grandpa Gohan, when he's, albeit been faked out by deaths before, or even himself when Goku has, embraced the afterlife, there's so many surface level, but also so many complex, great lessons that Toriyama has gifted the world through his, through his content. Dragon Ball deserves all of the roses and kudos it's ever been given. And I think it will continue to get them. At this point, we'll continue to see how it goes. Our coverage here of Dragon Ball will never end. I refuse because I'm too deep into it.
Yeah.
I can't let it go. I refuse.
It's great. It's great because there's always something to talk about. There's always something to debate. With this franchise, we know this firsthand. Death is not the end with Dragon Ball. So we're always going to keep going.
You're getting emotional saying that.
Yeah. It's just, it truly isn't, we're going to go. We're going to go even further beyond, as Goku would say.
Well, that's it. I mean, that's it. You just ended the episode for me. That's it. I don't have to do anything else with those words from Nick. Yeah, death is not the end. So, that is the passing of Akira Toriyama. It's a difficult thing to wrap around. We'll be all about it in mourning and thinking and remembering and paying tribute to him for days, weeks, months, years to come. But for that, I think that kind of wraps up our memorial for a creator who truly, and I mean this in the most like literal way possible, changed the world with his work and his vision. So that is kind of where we're going to leave off today for Anime Initiative. Again, we are the anime focus segment of Comic Book Nation I'm sure many, many of you people have heard. And if you haven't heard Comic Book Nation, go check out the episodes. Our family of podcasts has so many different segments. We have Quick Save for gaming, if you want to talk about, Mario, for instance. And we also have, other programs here. We have a Pokemon podcast, and we also have Phase Zero, which talks about all things Marvel. So please make sure to listen to that. And if you're into comics, we have the pull list. So if you want to talk about that, go check it out. For that, conversation today. That wraps it up. Again, if you want to find us, you can find Anime Initiative and Comic Book Nation on any of your preferred podcast services. If you want to talk to us specifically, I'm Megan Peters. You can find me on Twitter at MeganPetersCB. Where can they find you, Nick?
I am at Valdizology on all the socials.
And you, Evan?
And I am at EV Comedy, also on all the social media outlets. Things.
Awesome. And again, if you want to keep up with all the current anime news that's not just about Dragon Ball, or maybe only just about Dragon Ball, have your pick. You can check us out over at comicbook.com's anime channel. We write a ton and we do it all for you. So that'll be us for today. Thank you for listening, and we will be talking to you soon.